Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's photo show. As you can see, we've got an extra interloper into our little group that we've had going for the last few weeks. I'd like to introduce Neil Dodd, another member of the Slack room that we all love and enjoy. But Neil is an enthusiastic amateur, he says, but if you look at some of the stuff he takes, he's much more than that. So good evening, Neil. Welcome to our little club.
Hi, guys. Good to be here.
Thank you. And also tonight we have our regulars, Ian and Damon, who are going to help me try put this show together as we've been doing
over the last few weeks. Happy birthday to Ian. We just have to record that.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thanks. Yeah, all together. Happy birthday. Yeah, we're not going to start singing.
We're not singing.
So, congratulations, Ian. That, it's been nice to be able to wish everyone a good time at the moment. So, what we're going to do tonight is the usual format. We've got a couple of bits of news that we're going to talk about, some small pieces of kit that we've noticed in the last few days, and then we'll talk about a topic towards the end. So hopefully we can keep you entertained for the next few minutes or so. So let's move on to our first subject, which will be news items for this week. Thing that I spotted and Ian brought up as well was Android have announced this thing that they're going to try and stop altering facial recognition. Ian, you saw the piece. Do you want to tell us what you thought?
Yeah, so Google are suggesting that for Android 11, that basically, if you want to tap directly into the camera API and the camera hardware, you're not going to be doing any sort of touch-ups, if you like, to the image straight away, which I think is a good thing, actually. So basically, you're going to get the raw image straight out of the camera. There's no sort of beauty touch-ups to the face, because there was a camera that I read in the article that basically, it, without using an Instagram filter or anything like that, it was already applying some sort of level of healing to shots of portraits. So I think it's a good move, because can you trust what's coming out of cameras these days? Interesting move by Google. I mean, it doesn't stop people then launching their Instagram app or their face enhancing app and doing it that way. But what Google are saying is, if you're using the camera hardware and the API for that, it's got to be the original image coming straight out of the camera, which I think is a good thing.
So we're four guys. You've got to think of all the younger generation who love the idea of stuff coming out that actually flatters them, makes them feel better, and but then it could also add on to other things, give them wrong ideas of their own.
And mental health issues and
body size.
Well, as a very spotty teenager, I could have done with that all the time. I wouldn't have been
taking it on myself.
I had the camera around the other way, showing this beautiful face to the world. It was a teenager.
I've always preferred to be behind the camera, I have to say.
But I think that's a lot to do with I don't know what a percentage it is, but the amount of photographs taken on things like Instagram now and FaceTime and everything else, that far surpasses. So the fact that you can take a picture, it's automatically going to take out all the spots and lumps and grumps and whatever to present this image that kids are taken far down that road. The image is everything, absolutely everything. But we touched upon it a couple of shows ago when we were talking about photographs and their impact, especially relating to the apartheid museum that we were discussing, and some of the photographs there were knock your socks off. But and it came back to me thinking this line where we say that the camera never lies, but that's slowly evolving a way that you get to a point now, can you even trust any photograph you see? There's so much manipulation can be done, and especially now if it can be done almost in camera, take out the policeman wielding a stick and just show the bloody remains of his attack or something like that.
It reminds me of the story as a kid that I always used to love, and I still love the story, the picture of Dorian Gray. You're going to have your picture is stored away in the attic that never, that actually is the true likeness of yourself, and the world gets the altered image of you until the last minute.
But some of the photographs you see, it's like you've seen the joke photographs where people have put these wonderful images of themselves up on Instagram, and instead of me looking like a 21-year-old Svengali, I'm actually a 63-year-old man who's overweight and walks with a limp. So it's in this new era of fake news. Are we falling into the fake photo as being the norm now, rather than what you maybe see occasionally?
It's hard really these days to even know what is real, what isn't real. Mm. I mean, the only person that really knows is the person who pressed the shutter. Yeah. Or tap the screen or whatever it is. It's easy to compare some scenery, landmarks, things like that, because they're generally known, and there are many other images, and by comparing you can work out what's what. But of people, animals in certain places, situations, some are obviously fake or been enhanced by adding things in. It's really difficult to know what is real and what isn't. Has this person taken 10 photographs, combined all the best bits, or as you say, as a camera done it automatically? And I think having it done automatically in the camera is completely wrong. You need to have that original. It ensures the person taking the photo understands the skill of taking an image as well.
Ian, you were shortlisted for the landscape photography. Did you have to supply a raw image to the shortlist?
I did. What I like about that particular competition is they do allow certain categories, they do allow some digital manipulation, but the classic view category is they're very strict on what you can do with the images, which I like. Because that's what it should be about. It's a landscape photography competition. If you start moving objects in the scene or replacing skies and that, then that's not true to
how it was. It's not a landscape, is it?
No. There's a friend at my camera club who, we go out on field trips, and everyone will be pointing their camera to, the beautiful seascape, landscape, wherever it will be, and he'll be turning around and taking a picture of the graffiti or the rubbish bin that's over spilling or something like that. And his take on it is, well, someone's got to document it. And I think he's got a point. I think everyone seems to strive to this idyllic view of the world, but it's not like that. And it's important to capture things as they are.
But then that is the beauty of the art of photography. We mentioned about, whether it's docu photographs or we're actually turning a photograph into some art. But what concerns me is the ability now and some of the software to actually remove people from a photograph as if they were never there, or worse still, put them into the photograph, maybe telling a whole different story. So is there some way that we need some kind of digital stamp to say this is an original untouched photograph? Because the industry needs something to
I think it's also tag. I don't believe Apple would do anything like this, but you look at their portrait function on their phones. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, who's to say there's not a bit of touching up going on those images? But then you wonder, from a manufacturer point of view, they're trying to push their smartphone camera so hard that actually they want their images to look better than their competitors, don't they? So it does make you wonder, is it a selling point to say, oh, if you take a selfie with our camera, you're going to look a lot better?
I don't think any camera's going to do that for me, whatever they come out with. That's a no-no. I don't think that technology's been invented yet, I think guys, that's something we may open out in a further discussion maybe later another day, that whole aspect of where photography is going. Is it changing? And I was just looking at the photographs we've all got here. Of course, we're all liable for it, because we crop a photograph down or we set it how we want, and I'm sure if we took one photograph and gave it to all of us, we'd crop it and look at it in a different way. So
that'd be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah, I think, and that's the nature of the thing. But as I said, it just concerns me that with so much reliance being put on these, on the videos and pictures you see these days, you know, with everything that's going on in the world, that if you can manipulate a photograph, then surely manipulating a video won't be too far away to put any one of us into a scene where we didn't want to be. So, but yeah,
there was an image of Trump recently, and even the BBC were trying to clarify whether it was fake news or not, because he was at some hospital or university or something, and the question was, you know, is he wearing his mask correctly, because it was shown just below his nose.
Yeah,
but they couldn't verify whether it was genuine or not.
No.
And there was a concern that it had just been, you know, manipulated.
And I think, so, unfortunately, I think he's been the catalyst for this whole thing about fake. You know, he's used it so regularly now, it's now got into the consciousness of people.
He's using it in his way to doubt whether it is or not. I mean, yeah, the only way really to see if a picture is fake or not, the same way as a news story really, is to have another view of that image.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Ian sitting in front of a landscape, there's probably that landscape's been photographed from other angles. And by looking at those various images, you would be able to say, yeah, that is what that image is.
But look how simple the technology has become with Zoom, that you can put yourself into a landscape. I've got a GoPro behind me. You know, it's become so.
I thought you were at the zoo.
if I was at the zoo that close, I'd be running a mile by now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want GoPro looking over my shoulder that much. You know, beautiful as she is. No, I think I'll stay with a big screen between us. Okay. The other piece of news we were discussing was over the last few weeks, Ian, Neil, you haven't been with us, but we've been looking at the various large camera manufacturers and the announcements they've been making and the direction that they seem to be going. Now, Pentax, Damien, I think, did you bring this up about Pentax to come up with
an announcement
that we saw. Do you want to explain that for us, Damien?
Was it the Pentax? Was that me with the Pentax, or was it Ian?
Sorry, was it Ian? Sorry, Ian.
No, it's all right. I mean, they've basically come out with a statement saying that they're reaffirming their commitment to the SLR, which I don't know if is clever or sort of foolish, really, because, you know, the SLR is not going away for years. We've said this, but mirrorless is growing. So, there's nothing wrong with doing SLR and mirrorless, so yeah, I think Pentax should be dipping their toes in the market if they're clever. Otherwise, they're just going to be playing them into a smaller and smaller market.
But could that be the unique selling point that they do?
Yeah, exactly. But then potentially they
conventional SLR
put themselves right into a very small niche, don't they? If they're not careful, I think that's the danger, isn't it? I think as a business, you've got to have your finger in sort of multiple pies at times.
They might be bringing back the technology where you have a little winder to wind up the power on the mechanical camera that you could. So you were saying about worrying about battery life.
We might be sitting here in 20 years time and all lusting over SLRs, like everyone's lusting over film again. Everyone seems to be.
It's like that joke. You know, you can have the lenders all attached to your smartphone and making it look great, and then suddenly someone rings you and you have to put the whole camera to your ear. I mean,
you almost knock yourself out as you kick your helmet. Yeah, but it's interesting to say that the cons of a mirrorless camera at the moment, the big seems to be, I've been reading there about the heat, the overheating problems that they seem to be having, because they've crammed so much power into the camera. They've used that space to, and they've now got overheating problems. So, you know, water-cooled DSLRs, and the technology could be powerless.
Wind up pumps on the side.
That's right, yeah. But it does seem to be an interesting, as I said, maybe it's for publicity. Oh, look, guys, we're going to be the only manufacturer with proper DSLRs.
I use both mirrorless and the traditional DSLR. I have a D750 Nikon and a Z6. And when I went to the D750, I was I bought it secondhand because I was lusting after what is now the D780. But unfortunately, that didn't come and didn't come and didn't come. So I bought a Z6. Treated myself, bought the Z6. Now, I shoot a lot of photography at the rugby club for all different age groups. And the one thing that I don't like is the battery life. The battery life on a mirrorless is much less. If I don't let the thing go to sleep, so the electronic viewfinder stays on or the screen on the back stays on, then the battery drains much, much quicker. I mean, the Nikon, I think it's something like 330, 350 shots, they say, for the Z6. And the 780 is nearly 2,500. I mean, the difference is enormous. And if I'm shooting two or three rugby matches on a Saturday, which I have done on a number of occasions, I'm knocking up, 800 photos. I've got to make sure I've got batteries. I've got batteries charged. And I've got a way of charging them as well. And I usually
got you've got a way of changing them where you're not going to miss the action as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I usually run two cameras, but
right.
Murphy's law is that you put it down to change it, and something will happen. Yeah,
something amazing will happen.
Yeah, the only try of the game, or the only score.
Or the only try that's under your nose, right on the line.
Yeah. I had a Canon compact, and the battery life was low on that, and it did irritate me. I've forgotten now how it did irritate me, battery life. So it's one thing that I've not been irritated having the Canon D4, the D5 Mark IV. Its battery life is good. It keeps going. And even when it's down to half, you've got quite a bit of time left with it. The only thing that really kills it is the cold. So if you go out shooting in the winter, the batteries do go down quicker.
Imagine then you have a mirrorless. It's already got a short life.
The cameras all still rely on rechargeable batteries being changed. Are we going to see that with the new space or the new design of mirrorless camera, they'd actually have an inbuilt battery into the camera that you recharge?
Well, the Nikons you can charge via USB-C.
Right.
So you could have a battery pack on it or something connected to it, keeping it charged. That's not a bad thing. Obviously, it's more cumbersome, it's more to carry. They kind of make a battery pack for it, but it's a bit of an afterthought, to be honest.
Yeah. I suppose you could carry a pack inside a pocket of a jacket or something with a cord attached to it. So, okay.
One thing Pentax did say, and it sounds a bit, sort of dreamy, if you like, is that, an SLR, you're seeing what the lens is seeing. You're not looking for an electronic viewfinder. Actually, I've not played around with an electric viewfinder much, but seeing what the lens is seeing, I do find that really powerful. And I've had cameras that have had smaller optical viewfinders with, say, 95% coverage, and then going to the 5D Mark III, which I think is nearly 100% coverage, and it's a nice big optical viewfinder. It does make a huge difference. When you go back to that smaller one, you're like, oh, this feels weird. So that's an interesting point. You're seeing what the lens is seeing rather than what electronic viewfinder is delivering.
The electronic viewfinder on the Nikon is not bad, actually. You do really see what you get. As I said, the only thing that annoys me is when you've not used the camera for several minutes, and I try to get it to switch off. I've got to remember to click the shutter to wake it up, and it does take that split second to come on, whereas a prism, it's just there, even if the camera's off. If I could go back now, I would probably swap my Z6 for the 780. To be honest,
right.
I mean the two have very similar technologies, but I like that optical. Maybe I'm old school.
Yeah.
I don't know what Canon are rating on the R5, but I mean that's 45 megapixels, potentially 20 frames a second. I mean that's going to eat some battery, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what they're quoting on the battery life at the moment, but yeah. And if you go for the Canon batteries, you're looking up to sort of £100 for the generator batteries as well, I think. So it's not a cheap option to keep swapping batteries in and out, is it, really?
No, not at all.
Okay, interesting. Again, our ongoing insights into the where the DSLR and mirrorless is going. Okay, so let's take a few minutes to talk about new kit that we've seen in the last few days. The big one that Ian is going to talk about, I noticed as well, is this new Stellina camera.
It's me there, then Martin.
Was it you who brought it up? Sorry, Dame, I'm getting all my facts wrong tonight. It's,
don't worry.
Neil's thrown me completely out on my...
It's all my fault, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Damien.
I was frustrated last night because Neil's going out to take a go at the Comet, and I had all these local landmarks all sussed out, but the amount of light pollution just destroyed me, and I couldn't get any good look at the Comet at all. So I've got to go out tomorrow night. But so I've been moaning that on a Zoom call with a physics professor, and the physics professor says, "Have you seen this piece of kit?" And it's this Stellina, and he said, "It'll set you back €4,000, but it's a neat little piece of kit. You watch the YouTube video with it, and the guy really, he has a beautiful setting to set his telescope up in the, looks like the Arizona or the Californian desert, and he sets it up. He's got a small tripod, and it's only about that size, and he carries on with a hold all, seats at home, gets his phone out, and dials up the nearest constellation, and this little camera swivels around, stacks a whole load of pictures, and then delivers absolutely cracking Hubble-like pictures of the galaxies, all these different galaxies. And in the YouTube video, in the end, the guy just goes to sleep by the telescope, while the telescope's going around the universe or the galaxy taking pictures. And I just thought, yeah, it's pretty good, but €4,000, I think I'll have to hang on a bit for that or go into a consortium to buy it. But quite fascinating that we talked earlier about how technology is changing, that you have sort of like a pop-up telescope that can do faraway galaxies. It's just, the mind boggles.
But also the fact that it can link in and track the object that you're filming, like you'd get, I know there's kit you can get for small telescopes, yeah, and stuff like that, but that's still pretty far-fetched to think all of that is going to be put into one small, it's a backpack sized piece of kit, but yeah, just plugs it in and away it goes.
I wouldn't want to drop it on the floor though. I mean, imagine it's quite fragile.
Yeah,
€4,000. Yeah.
But its ability to actually show live photographs to your phone, you can actually see what it's actually going to take, and then set it all up to there. Now, Ian, you're our stellar expert. Some of the stuff you take is
I don't know. Neil's
stunning.
Done some very good astro stuff.
Yeah, just
with your advice, Ian.
Pass on some of that advice, guys. Come on, we're all desperate to take a decent picture of NeoWise, but
I mean, this does look like an impressive piece of kit, but I mean, it's not light. It's 11 kilos in weight. It's some hefty gear to lug around. It's got a 400 mil focal length, so you're not going to do that wide visitor of the Milky Way or anything like that. It is for zooming in on a galaxy, a nebula, that sort of thing. And it's only 6.4 megapixels, so it's not particularly high resolution, but by doing this real-time stacking that it's doing, which that's the hard thing when it comes to astrophotography, when you see all these shots of the NeoWise Comet and fantastic Milky Way shots, and a lot of the hard work is actually in the post-processing. And this is doing a lot of that for you. So by doing it in camera, I guess, 6.4 megapixels, if it's a relatively clean file, then you're still going to be able to print it up to a decent size. So I think paying for the convenience of just being, like Damien says, being able to plonk it down, sit back and let it do all the hard work.
It's a great bit of kit, but at least it comes with a free app.
Yeah, but the in-app purchases would be horrendous. Buy a galaxy for $6 billion.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, the app's free, but if you want to do a shot of I don't know, Andromeda or something, it's $4.99 in that purchase.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what it probably shows is that the technology is just there, that people are coming up better and better and better ideas of working out how to stack things together. And I mean, that's what he said about a few minutes to stack it. I mean, when we're stacking those star trails, I usually go and make a cup of tea or something like that.
Yeah. I think that may be why it's not such a high resolution.
Yes.
To try and control that. One thing I did notice looking at the specs was it's got dew control, so it's got an integrated heater. And if anyone's ever tried to do stars and that, if you do time it wrong, and you cut, you're out there and the dew comes in and your camera gets moist and your lens gets all covered with dew, it's a nightmare. I've been there. I've wasted a few star trail efforts.
Is that what they call underwater stellar photography?
Yeah.
Not the best, but you take a lot of stellar photographs as well, Neil.
I've kind of got hooked on taking pictures of the moon recently.
No, don't go there. I come.
I'd take a decent photograph
of the moon, and I still haven't achieved it.
I'll stick the knife in and twist it and tell you I had one published in a local paper recently.
Oh, very good, very good.
Okay, all right, I'm going to show it. Neil, send that to me. I'm going to show it now to everyone on the screen. No. How it can be done. Yeah, great.
No, I mean, the start, I was fascinated by some of the star trails Ian had done. I asked him a couple of questions. He was very helpful in telling me sort of what sort of exposure he'd done and stuff. And I think it was 3 or 4 consecutive nights. My wife wondered what I was doing and who I was going to meet at sort of 11:30 at night in the middle of the vineyards. And the next morning I show this picture of a little hut in the vineyards and stars all going around. But it's fascinating, I find. It was great to be able to do it. I live quite close to an airport. And the one thing with the COVID is with the airports closed, it's been really good to do that sort of thing. The first good one I got out, I stood there and I watched the camera click and the ISS went screaming across. I didn't realize it was the ISS at the time, and I cursed. I said, thinking there'll be a white line straight across this image. Thank you very much. I've just spent 45 minutes in the last half an hour, but actually it really adds to it. And knowing that, it was quite special.
Quickly rename the photograph. This is my picture of the ISS, by the way.
Well, I ended up going out 2 or 3 times because sometimes the balance, getting something in that foreground to put it into perspective, it's quite difficult. And I went out one day with a big LED light and another day with a couple of flashes to try and light up the building a little bit in the last couple of images. To do different techniques and combine that in so that you could see the graffiti on the or the picture, the painting on the little hut out in the vineyard. So it was, I was really pleased with it, and it was a task really worthwhile doing. It's one I'll do it again, but I want to do it somewhere where I get a bit more dark light, as it were.
Are we going to talk later about the doing the technique, because I'm interested with you guys about the comet technique and what, how to set up the camera, etc.
I have no idea. I'm going to probably use the same as I do for the moon to start with and see how it comes out.
Well, they're saying use a very wide aperture, about
I saw that.
Seconds, up the ISO a little bit and go for that. But some people have been stacking it, and I suppose it's moving a bit. So if you're stacking, you're going to get, will you get some blurring? I would have thought. I don't know.
Yeah, you will. Yeah.
It's
worth. Yeah, but as with all these things, people keep telling me bracket every which way you can, you know, and then you give yourself some chance of getting something decent. I usually tend to use my thumb in the picture as my reference point. That sort of often seems to throw the picture out. I don't know why, but I have to keep the hands away. So, a couple of weeks ago we did a challenge. I think tonight should be another challenge. This week should be another challenge. I'm going to challenge all three of you for a picture of Neil Wise. that we can show next week. So
do you want the raw files, I guess?
Yeah. date stamp with you when you take them, so it shows this week, not something you're taking 6 years ago, and it's not the same comment. So yeah, so let's see if we can try and get a decent picture of Neil.
Like my wonderful life, we can spend on the moon.
That's it. The rest of my holiday in the UK is taken up. I should be sleeping all day and out all night.
Oh, you know how to live it up, don't you, Neil? That's great.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So that's, because apparently the next couple of nights are meant to be reasonable. So we might try and get out and see what we can do. And then if anyone's got 4,000 euros to spare, seems to be that's a piece of kit you can.
I'm looking right now if it's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's this week's challenge. So we're just going to borrow one of them.
I think I'll be waiting until it's on eBay, let alone Amazon Prime.
You know? No. Just get it delivered, use it, send it back. I wasn't happy.
you got 30 days. Good tip, Neil. I'm sure that'll go down well. Yeah. Now, the other piece of kit that came up in our pre-meeting discussion was, Ian, you were showing some really good photographic paper.
Yeah, I got a birthday present. I did drop some hints. Is this Olmec paper? I get it shot properly. I first got onto it at a photography show because they it's from Innovo Art, so they do quite a few different types of printed paper.
Yeah, there'll be a link in the picture somewhere, guys.
Yeah, and they had a stand at the photography show, and I've every year I go now, I make sure I actually get some, and because there wasn't a show this year, I run out of paper. So thankfully got some for my birthday, but it is really good paper. This is the photo satin paper. About 20 quid for about 50 sheets, so it's not totally unreasonable price for a good quality paper, and it's a good weight as well. So
is that through an inkjet or a laser?
Inkjet, that one. For
do they do smaller sizes, 5x7?
Don't think so.
Oh, because that's the one Sandy always wants. My wife likes pictures of the children, so that is that size they tend to be after.
Yeah, not sure. They might do. It's worth checking.
I'm going to look at that.
Yeah. But it's a good, really good paper.
Nothing stopping you printing 4 and cutting it up.
Oh, of course, yes. Just cut it. Yeah, cut it out.
Yeah. The scalpel knife and the piece of lino on the floor with a. Yeah, I've done all that.
Yeah. Don't do it on the dining table.
When you can spend $4,000 on a camera that will shoot the stars, well, why do you want to be cutting paper up?
Yeah. Okay. Now, the other interesting thing tonight is that Neil joining us is actually like a Nikon interloper here, because we're Canon men.
Yeah.
Neil's already threatened to walk off the show because of that, but I've persuaded him to stay. And you also so it's something we're not well versed in. But you were saying about this. There were some rumours about the new Z mount that they've
So. I don't know if this is something they had up their sleeve, and because of the Canon release recently, they decided to announce it. I mean, there was some rumours a few weeks ago about updates to the Z6 and Z7. I think I saw it as a Z6S and 7S. But what something that has come out is the new Nikon Z5 that's promised in a couple of weeks. I think it's a reaction to the Canons. It's positioned to sit between the Z50, which is the small frame, opposed to full frame cameras, the 6 and the 7. It's a full frame camera. It has a lot of specs of the Z6, but it's just a bit lower down. You know, the frame rate is lower. I think they said 4 to 5 frames a second. It's got all the 4K video, that sort of stuff. So I think they're trying to position it at the low end, a bit like, I guess, the old D500s, something like that. So the low end of that mid-range mirrorless. So they're getting for the low end of the Z50, the mid with the sort of 5, 6, 7, and there's rumors of something at the top end, but it hasn't appeared. It hasn't appeared.
Have you heard any we've been reading all these stories about the overheating problems that Canon are encountering at the moment. Do you heard that in the, anywhere, Neil? Is that
no, I've not. I've not heard of it with the Nikons. I don't really do a lot of video. In fact, I don't do any video at the moment, or that's maybe going to change shortly with some requests I've had. But no, I've not heard anything at all with the Nikons with that. Right. No.
Yeah, we were. I was looking at some...
far better than Canon.
Yeah, okay, we'll go into that one in a big time. Yeah, okay.
I mean, joking aside, I mean, I because Nikon were first with the Z6, Z7, was it?
Yeah, the two were released at the same time.
Yeah, and I had massive gear loss for them. I thought they were gorgeous looking cameras. And when Canon came out with the R and the RP, I felt like Canon totally missed the mark. I still think Nikon's introduction to mirrorless was a better offer.
Yeah, I mean, my only things with the Z6, I have a Z6, is the little bit on the battery life and the rubber on the grip wears easily. That's the only thing. I love it as a camera. It's the screen on the back and using the 273-point autofocus. It's really good, and the eye detection is very good now with the latest firmware. But previously, with the firmware it first came out with, it wasn't even worth it.
Is the screen flip?
It
out?
Is a flip. It's flipper out.
Yeah.
I think the next ones will be able to flip completely down like the D780 does. So you could take a selfie. Why would I? I have no idea. You know,
I just find sometimes it's difficult if you're doing low level shots.
It flips out. It flips out beautifully for that sort of stuff. If you're down with your puddles.
Down in my puddles, yeah.
Down in your puddles, it's brilliant. Yeah, I've taken a few down there with the screen flipped out. Really, really good.
That's definitely something for when you're getting older, though, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
Because I haven't got a flippy screen. And not
okay, don't, you don't have to rub your birthday in that much, Ian. Honestly, that's not fair at all. You know?
Yeah.
My only concern about that would be the selfie stick would be something huge. I'm like tungsten, trying to hold the camera straight.
Well, the puddle selfie stick would be, you know, just you stick it up in the little foot on the bottom with the screen out and a remote to click.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things is I used to be quite happy going out with my little compact or the iPhone taking pictures around the streets. But now I've got so used to the big camera, I want to take pictures of that out on the streets. And I don't think it's a good idea sometimes in the places I wander with the camera. But I do like the quality of the picture I get from it because I can play around with it. And that's the thing. I've now got over the fact that the portability. I like to have a big camera. And I enjoy the big lens to give me the detail. I just worry that people start looking at me with a camera that size.
There's a really good accessory you can get for that, Damien, if that's what you're worried about. It's called a minder. 6'6" guy, you know, and he's standing behind you, you're okay, you know?
It's 21 hours.
Oh, thank you, Siri. Okay. Right, okay. That's great. Thanks, Neil. So it's nice to get an alternative view to what we've been discussing the last few weeks. Okay, thanks guys. It's a lot of interesting stuff there. We normally have a talk about a topic that's been on our minds, and tonight's topic was, fun enough, was going to be about comets. But we've already, as you've been watching the show, had quite an interesting conversation. So we're going to expand on that just a little bit before the end of the show about some tips and tricks about how you go about that. You had a particular question, Damien, that you wanted to ask.
Yes, I was going to ask the two of you about the lighting and how you would light up the foreground to the background and that. So that was just because you said earlier about using torches and flashes and how you would use those. I mean, when I did my star trail, someone next door, the neighbor, put the bathroom light on and I was, like you, cursing. But in fact, that worked really well because it gave some sort of focus to the picture. So I'd be interested in your views on it.
Ian?
Well, three light sources. One you might not think about, the moon. So typically trying to shoot stars, you don't actually want the moon in because that diffuses some of the stars.
Got to find out. Is the moon up tonight, Neil? I don't know.
No, it's new moon.
I have done some sort of star shots, and if you can get sort of the moon behind you and you're shooting towards the stars that way, you still get a good number of stars. But the moon, I mean, if you're lucky to get really dark skies, the moon, you can almost see where you're walking and that if you get a good bright full moon.
Yeah.
So don't underestimate the power of the moon for a light subject. I did some tin mine buildings locally, and I didn't need any torches or anything. I just did a long enough exposure, and you could make it almost look like daylight. So that's one source. Another source is a flash. I have used a flash speed light before, but just firing the pilot light on the speed light. So
on camera, off camera.
Off camera, just held in a hand, but using the pilot light, so it wasn't triggering the flash of stuff. So it was just manually firing the pilot light and going around the building. And then the third one is just an LED torch, but it's quite tricky. Light painting itself is quite a skill. I've got an LED torch which has got like a zoom head on it. So you can get like a really narrow beam and a really wide beam. But with light painting, you've got to do it so evenly, otherwise you end up with these blotches. So it can be quite a skill. It's just trial and error. You have to, it's almost better if you can go for a really wide head on the LED light, so you can light the whole subject and just hold it still rather than trying to paint. Because if you don't paint evenly, that's when you get the lines and the blotches, and it doesn't work so well. So there you go.
You've obviously seen some of my paintwork on doors, Ian. That's pretty worried about that now. Okay, fair enough. Sorry, Neil.
I guess one of my ones was I've used the same as Ian with the flash, and just triggered it. So at the end of the series of exposures, I've gone round and just triggered it at the building that was in the foreground. But the other one I did was I actually took one of these, it's not halogen, but it's an LED floodlight with me. And I just turned it on for a second or so just to light the whole building. I then turned it off in the same manner as a flash. It was a bit of trial and error. But you can, because if you've already taken the series of photos you wanted to, you can actually try both methods with the flash and with the light, because at the end of the day you can say, right, I don't want those in my series, as long as they're not too far apart. But if you've got enough of a series, I mean, Ian was telling me to get that continuous line, and you need to take enough shots, but as long as you've got a continuous line, I think I did about 300 shots or something over an hour and 20 minutes. And then doing the light at the end, I could do two different methods fairly quickly, just leaving the camera going and just take away the one that looked the worst, effectively.
Yeah. Got a fourth light source, car headlights.
Well, yeah. I also had that in mind.
Well, deliberate or accidental?
No, accidental. I did one of the last star trails I did was a monument nearby, and I positioned the Polaris behind the top of the monument so that the stars were spiraling around.
Yeah, I remember the monument. That one, yeah.
And the evening was going great, and then a car came up, you know, like silly o'clock in the hour in the night. Why they were driving up there, I don't know, but they lit the side of the monument, and I was like, oh my God. And actually, I left them in because, you know, like Ewan was saying about people lighting people and giving people definition, it gave the monument just some shape.
Yeah.
So it worked. It was just a happy accident. But what Neil was saying is, you know, what's good about doing a star trail is doing a series of shots. If you do, say, 30 minutes of shooting and something happens at 31 minutes that messes it up, where you just bin those ones and you still got the 30 minutes that hopefully were good shots.
And you mentioned it, do you always focus on Polaris as your starting point? That's how you get the circular ones. If you want ones that just like trailed across in arcs, then you just pick a particular star in the sky and stay focused on that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want if you want sort of the circular motion, then obviously Polaris stays in a fixed position, so you get that movement around it. But you can, yeah, I mean, you can technically you can face anywhere, but you'll just get sort of an arcing across the sky.
Right. And how are you finding all these hundreds of Elon Musk satellites? Are they affecting what you do?
I haven't tried, actually. I haven't done any astro stuff for months. I do need to get out, just with everything that's going on in the world at the minute. It's not really been possible for me.
But I've read I've read some issues about some photographers and stellar
photographers stuff.
Are complaining like mad about the.
They
said they tried to turn it down by angling them slightly different. But if you look at, I use is it Dark Sky? No, Night Sky, the app. And if you look on there and you turn satellites on, there's hundreds of them. It's just obliterates everything. So okay, right. So it comes back to what we were saying. It's a task for all of us this week to do a bless you, Damien, to do a NeoWise photograph, and we'll see how all that works out, and hopefully inspire some others out there to try take some pictures. Send them in to us. We'd love to see your efforts and the work that you're doing.
Send them in to us.
Yeah, by all means, you can either send them to me at martinkelly@mac.com, or to use the Slack room, whichever is easy for the guys. I'd like to say a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is IMN Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got. And they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money. And they deal with any kind of problem, actually. That's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Macs, and I'm sure they can help you out. Let me say, Damien, how can we get hold of you if people want to send in some stuff?
At Damo, or at Damo on Instagram.
Okay. Ian?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Okay, and great. And Neil?
Dodsy Photo on Instagram, or dodsyphoto.ch.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for joining us. I know you're on holiday, Ian, so Neil, you're on holiday, so you've joined us from that, which I do appreciate, and I hope you enjoyed taking part in the show. It's been really interesting getting your thoughts and opinions as well. Okay, guys, that's all for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you all next week. Good night, all. Bye now. See you guys.
Cheers.
Bye.
See you then. Bye.